Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all our listeners. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mdiwa Gavazo from the Business Day and Financial Mail. And for today, it is episode 66, and we usually tend to focus on what's going on in and around the South African economy. But for today, we decided to look more broadly because South Africa is one of 50-plus countries on the continent. And to help us unpack what's going on economically on the rest of the continent is Neville Mandimika, who is an economist and fixed income strategist at Rand Merchant Bank. Neville, how are you?
I'm very well. Thanks, Leo, for having me on the show. It's been a lifelong dream of mine.
Well, I've been trying to get Neville on the show for a while, so I'm actually quite happy to do this for today. So before we, I guess, begin, you know, when we say fixed income strategist, et cetera, what are you looking at in Africa? Like, what does your work actually entail when it comes to, I guess, keeping up with what's going on the continent?
So my job basically entails answering one particular question for a lot of our clients. Yeah. Where should they be putting their money?
Yeah.
Right. So in my role as an analyst or as a researcher, I'm looking at different parts of the continent, right?
Yeah.
Whether it's macroeconomic themes or whether it's financial markets, where should you be putting your money, you know, from a risk return perspective? Where are you going to get the most bang for your buck?
Yeah.
So that's basically what I do on a 9-to-5.
So before we answer that key question of where should people be investing their money, I think a lot of the headlines that we hear when it comes to South Africa, we deal with a lot of hard economics news on this show. Last week we had the SONA and all that, and a lot of the time it's a lot of doom and gloom about the South African economy, etc. How is the rest of the economy and how is South Africa, I guess, gauging when it comes to the rest of the African continent? And is it really that bad?
I wish I had a short answer to that one, but as an economist, I'm paid to talk, right?
Yeah.
So I'll give you the long answer. So if you think about, you know, say growth within South Africa, right? No growth, let's put it that way. Relative to the other 50-plus economies that you made mention to, we're certainly better than some, but we are definitely not top tier when it comes to growth.
Mm.
So on average, sub-Saharan Africa is growing at about 3.4%, right?
Yeah.
Triple what we're seeing here, if we're lucky.
Yeah.
But there are also some very, very economies that are in a dire state, right?
Yeah.
South Sudan, all of those countries, right? They're going through all of their issues. But I think it's important to realize, like you mentioned, that we are one of many countries where, you know, we're competing for the same dollar, you know, that we want. I mean, the president is talking about $100 billion investment drive. A lot of other countries are going for that same amount, right? So, and I think it's always important to ask ourselves a very important question. Are we attractive enough for capital?
Yeah.
Okay. With all the issues that we're going through, SONA and all of that, are we in a better position today compared to last year, you know, in terms of being relatively attractive? And unfortunately, it seems like there are better opportunities elsewhere in terms of investing, particularly from a corporate SA base.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the likes of Egypt, Morocco, Ghana, you know, these economies are growing at a far greater clip than we are.
Yeah.
And their macroeconomic health seems to be improving at a faster pace than what we're seeing here or projected to be seeing over the next couple of years. So it seems like, you know, some of our clients are starting to look elsewhere. I mean, where are you going to grow your capital if there's no growth in South Africa?
Yeah.
And some of these markets offer relatively attractive opportunities.
Yeah. You've already mentioned Morocco, places like Egypt, but where are, you know, I guess, corporates directing their attention? And is it really about, I guess, catching that growth swing, or is it going to places that aren't as, I guess, as well industrialized as South Africa is?
Well, from what I've observed, I mean, corporate SA, they tend to take on two forms in terms of their thinking. Number one, if you're going to have a Africa expansion strategy, it seems like, you know, the likes of Botswana and Namibia, given the close linkages, would be the first point that they look, because it's familiar, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you'd rand and convertibility and all of that is relatively easier. But when you look further afield, you know, in Francophone nations or even in North Africa, those opportunities policies, yes, are great, but it seems like, you know, it takes a little bit more convincing to actually push forward into some of those markets, although it's still relatively attractive. I mean, bearing in mind that there are other companies, you know, that are heavily invested in Nigeria and also somewhere in the east there, but it seems like a bulk of them still like to stick to markets that are fairly familiar but offer better growth opportunities. Hence, you know, the Southern Africa part seems to be a bit more attractive for corporates.
Okay. And how are the different regions? Because the way I understand it, you've got your East Africa block, which I think is on average 5-7% growth. I think West Africa has been, you know, West Africa is an interesting place for me simply because there's so much money there, but you just wonder, like, is it staying in country? Is it leaving? You know, are any of these concerns, I guess, the things that corporates are looking for? And I guess you guys are factoring into whatever models you guys are coming up with.
So I think two things to note there. You know, growth is only one half of the story that we look at when we're advising clients in terms of where to actually invest their capital. The other issue is around operating environment, which you alluded to in terms of flow of funds, right? So if you look at, you know, countries, you know, such as call it Angola, for example, yeah, right? It's a fairly huge market, but there are some challenges in terms of your ability to get in and out in terms of your dollars there. Ethiopia is another market where it's fairly huge and growing at 7-8%, but it's very difficult to actually get your dollars out if you invest in some of those markets. So what we basically tell corporates is that, yes, the starting point and the point of departure is to look at economic growth, which is fine, and how big some of those markets are. But it's important to also have a very clear understanding of how easy it is to actually do business in some of those markets. I mean, we've seen some companies, which I shall not name on this show, that have ventured into the likes of Nigeria and actually realized that it's not as easy to transact in some of those markets, and subsequently had to pull out. So I think that's an example, you know, of having a firm grip in terms of how some of those markets actually operate. And even more complicated when you start looking at, you know, North Africa, right? The way they do business there is significantly different to here. So it's very important to be extremely discerning in terms of where you actually put your money and your operating model within some of those markets. Because if you make it in South Africa, it doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to be a hit in Morocco, Tunisia, or Egypt. I mean, it takes a fair amount of understanding the local landscape.
And in that, because if you're a South African company and you've got an Africa growth strategy that you're trying to implement, just by virtue of getting out of South Africa, you become a provider of FDI.
Yeah.
Right. So when corporates or business people locally are looking at those opportunities, how much is that influenced or informed by what players in, I guess, other parts of the world? Because I'm sure you've got, you know, the people from the US, you've got the EU, you've got China, right? How much are South African corporates influenced by where they see those flows of capital going on the continent?
Well, to a large degree, because if we see some of the countries that are particularly attractive right now, you know, from an FDI flow, right? I don't know, call it Egypt, call it Ghana, maybe Kenya, okay? Those markets are doing the right things, okay? Hence, they are attracting the amount of money that they're attracting. So it becomes a very easier conversation with corporates SA to say, look, you know, other international players are looking at it. So it's not like you're investing in some unknown country, you know, where you think you've got the crystal ball for that and no one else is seeing it. So I think that conversation becomes that much easier, because if you're attractive to capital, that means you must be doing the right things. And therefore that conversation becomes that much easier for corporates SA.
And where do you see actual, I guess, you know, the countries that we hear about all the time, Nigeria, Ghana, we've got the East African countries. But apart from those, I guess the popular ones, which other regions have you found, you know, I guess interesting, you know, as a potential hotbed of economic activity?
Well, I would say the less popular, but certainly more attractive in my view, I'd say, you know, have a look at Cote d'Ivoire, have a look at Senegal. I think the reforms that we're seeing there are quite phenomenal in a great way. So I think these economies are diversifying their export base, they're diversifying their economy in order to not be reliant on one or two commodities, so that they are not pulsating with global prices. So think of Nigeria, for example, right? Yeah. Whatever happens to oil, you get a sense, right, that Nigeria will be affected significantly But if you're diversifying your economic base, it becomes that much more easier for you to be resilient.
Yeah.
And that's what we're seeing in Senegal. That's what we're seeing in Cote d'Ivoire. So yeah. I would definitely say I think those markets are relatively less appreciated by corporate SA. But from what we see, there are some fairly good opportunities there.
And what are the industries that are, I guess, big there?
So business services is huge. Agriculture is huge there. And also, you know, there's stuff like, raw materials. It's obviously fairly huge. But I think the point to underscore there is that they're not comfortable just relying on the raw materials that they have in some of those markets, or oil or gas or whatever the case is. But they're looking to actively diversifying their markets. So the fishing industry is huge in Senegal, for example.
Yeah. And there's actually, you know, the way that you keep talking, especially countries saying that they just want to have that raw, those raw materials, etc., in the country. How far is the debate going on the continent just around, I guess, I know people throw around the word beneficiation.
Yeah.
You know, in Nigeria, you have Aliko Dangote, who's now building an oil refinery because so much of that money has been going overseas for refining. But in terms of, I guess, bringing some of those more tertiary industries to the continent, where are you seeing that activity?
Look, it's always really challenging, particularly when you're dealing with political figures within the continent when it comes to diversification, because it's easy to talk about, yes, we need to diversify when oil prices are like at 30, right? Because you know you're feeling the pain of not diversifying.
Yeah.
But suddenly, if oil hits 100, well, then everything is going fine. So why should we need to, you know? So the conversation tends to happen at the wrong point of the commodity cycle, yeah. Right? So that's where the challenge is. Number one. Secondly, it takes a fair amount of effort and strategy that spans over any political cycle to get it right. Right. So if you look at, you know, historically countries like, you know, your Singapore's or even Dubai and the UAE in general, their efforts span, more than just a 4 or 5 year election cycle. Right.
Yeah.
So we tend to hear all of these things. Yes, we need to diversify. But as soon as, you know, another government comes in, then, you know, that conversation either ebbs and flows with whoever is in power at that particular point in time. So I think there has to be a strategy that is politics agnostic, if that's even possible within Africa, in order to actually get it right. So yes, it's always a talking point, but it's very difficult to point to success stories within Africa that have actually gotten it right, from hard exposure to raw materials to actually doing, moving up the curve in terms of value added or beneficiation, like you mentioned.
Okay. I just want to switch the conversation over to currencies, because I know that, you know, some of the daily reports that you guys put out, there's a big focus on currencies. Can you talk to us a little bit about what's going on the continent? Are there particular currency considerations that corporates or investors should be, I guess, paying attention to? And where do you see, I guess, the big moves?
It's an incredibly important part of actually deciding where to actually invest your money in. Because if you're comfortable with the rand exposure, either from a cost base or revenue base, when you start talking naira or cedi or I don't know any of the other countries currencies, it's a different ball game altogether. And these economies, as varied as they are in terms of economic policies, they're also extremely varied in terms of how they manage their FX, right?
Yeah.
So it's a significant mind shift when you're talking to corporates and say, look, if you're going to be investing in, again, I'll stick with Nigeria, right? It's not a free floating currency to the degree that the South African rand is, right?
Yeah.
So here we're fairly comfortable, you know, looking at our Bloomberg screens and, you know, numbers going red. but in some of these markets, you know, it can be fairly static, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's a different mindset, or at least consideration that corporate SA has to put into focus, that these markets don't trade, number one, they're not as liquid as the South African rand is, and they can be volatile. When they move quite significantly. So cast your minds back to 2016, when we saw oil price collapse to the sort of mid-30s, right? At that point, you saw the Nigerian naira devalue quite significantly, right? So you go from nothing and then a sudden devaluation overnight.
Mm.
While there could be signs to actually tell you that something is coming, it's not always as predictable in terms of where those large devaluations are going to come. So I think it's a very important thing to actually keep at the back of your mind, because there are companies that have gotten burnt purely on FX moves alone.
Really?
quite significantly. So I think it then underscores the point of ensuring that whatever exposure to the degree that you can, that you have in some of these markets, that it's hedged, right? So it's, I know it can be quite costly to actually hedge your exposure, depending on which instruments you're using, et cetera, et cetera. But the pain of not doing that when things go wrong can be quite severe. So in again, you know, markets such as Nigeria, when you saw that devaluation, it was a greater than a 50% move, right? So if you're taking a 50% haircut on your FX exposure, it can wipe away all the margins that you'd have made in a year. So it's important to actually hedge some of your exposure. So I think markets like you know, Nigeria tends to have a fairly rigid FX regime. Some markets like your Zambian kwacha, you know, tends to be a bit more flexible in terms of its moves. But again, each market has to be studied in great detail to get a sense of the FX regime and where the risks actually lie.
Mm. No, it's a lot. Before we end off, I want to, I guess, turn your attention to our northern neighbors, because it's something that I've seen you covered quite a bit, and that's, you know, Zimbabwe.
Yeah.
You know, what's your feeling about, I guess, the situation there right now?
How many hours do we have on the show? if you want me to break it down, look, I think it's no secret that Zim is going through a very painful time in terms of its business cycle at this stage. The challenge that we're facing right now is there's no discernible, clear path towards getting ourselves out of this hole. You know, we've got a currency regime that not a lot of people actually understand how it's working. Yeah, how you know, black market, complex, interbank market.
Yeah.
I mean, all of these
RTGS,
things, it's very tricky.
Yeah.
So, I mean, just a sidebar, I mean, the one time I was speaking to a few international guys and they asked me about Zim. And at that point, I mean, they took it for granted that they knew what bond notes were. And so when I mentioned bond notes, like, you know, do they have an active bond program? You know, it's similar to what you have in development. I was like, no, actually, you know, Zim 101 is, you know, this is how the market trades, etc. So I think there's a lack of understanding from the outsiders looking in terms of how that market works, and even more painfully is that you've got you know, such a huge discrepancy between, you know, interbank market and parallel market and arbitrage and all of that, and these are risks that investors have to contend with. So if you're putting your money in dollars, in what currency are you going to get it in, and can you actually convert it immediately back into dollars or whatever currency that you'd have invested in? And all of these things have to be taken into consideration. And you know, purely from a growth perspective, we are a significant outlier in terms of where the risk of the region is actually moving at. Like I mentioned in my earlier remarks, sub-Saharan Africa is growing at 3%, and yet there are forecasts that, you know, Zim could be contracting by as much as 5% in 2020. So some of those issues then become a very important consideration. If I put my money in Zim, what's my opportunity cost when I've got, you know, access to Nigeria or Ghana or Kenya, you know, that are growing at plus 5%.
Yeah.
So, you know, these are some of the things that some of the clients that we speak with have to grapple with when it comes to investment decisions in Zim.
The reason I brought up Zimbabwe is simply because there are a number of South African corporates, you know, that have exposure to that market. And it baffles the mind sometimes why and how some of them have remained invested in the country. But they must be seeing something there. And whether you're talking, I guess, Tonga, Impala, Pick and Pay, you know, etc. You know, they have significant, you know, holdings, significant investments. And sometimes it doesn't seem as if there's any sign of pulling out, right? So they're seeing something there, as much as we're talking about a contraction in the country. So I was also then interested to get your thoughts just around what are people actually seeing there, and what type of returns are they actually generating? Because, you know, for most people, they'll be like, no, we'll never do that. But for a lot of South African corporates, they've decided that we're staying there. And for a long time, even South African Airways, for example, you know, was there, even through all the different currency. They were, you know, every day, 4 flights a day, you know, all of that stuff. Yeah.
Well, the potential is certainly unmatched. I mean, when you look at Zim, right now, with all the issues that we've mentioned, asset prices in dollar terms are extremely cheap, right? Because you've got a currency that is weakening quite aggressively. If your funding base is dollars or rand, that means the value that we can pick up these assets is extremely cheap. So it takes a bit of a mental shift in terms of looking at it from that side to say, look, you know, I can pick up some of these assets at relatively cheap or discounted prices. So even if I'm there and I'm generating RTGS revenue and I can pay my workers in RTGS, well, you'll be fine, right? Because you've already sunk in capital in some of these markets. That's why we haven't seen a mass exodus of companies shutting down, at least that are SA based, moving out. So I think that's one way to look at it. If we do get obviously the politics right and everything else that is associated with it, I think Zim will fly. I mean, we don't have to look at too far back. If we look at 2009 when we dollarized, the period between 2009 and possibly up to 2015, the Zim economy was growing at, call it 6-7%, and at some point it was growing at 11%. So the upside can be huge. So if you want to get in, you'd rather do it now when obviously asset prices are extremely depressed, depending on what your view of the economy is going to be. If we do turn around, I think Zim will be a significant outperformer. But it then begs the question, are we going to turn around, and when is that turnaround going to happen? And unfortunately, I don't have the crystal ball to be able to tell you that. But I would certainly say that we do have a fair amount of clients that are keeping one eye on Zim.
Okay, cool. You might not have the crystal ball on Zimbabwe, but I am going to ask you to look in your crystal ball for the rest of Africa, because, as economists, we look to you guys to sort of, peer into the future.
Now you're putting me on the spot, yeah.
So I guess the last talking point for us is, what's your outlook, for the rest of the year as far as Africa's concerned?
Look, I think the outlook is fairly positive. That said, I think there are some serious risks that we have to contend with. Coronavirus obviously is a very topical issue, and a lot of companies are feeling the heat there, and by extension, Africa will feel the heat as well. So I think some of those global risks, I mean, you've got US elections, you've got China that is going to be slowing down. All of these things will materially affect Africa. So even though we're looking at a possibly 3.4, 3.5% growth on average on the continent, there are some risks to contend with. That said, I think there are a few countries that will outperform. I think the likes of Cote d'Ivoire, Senegal, Ethiopia, purely from a growth perspective, will outperform the region. And then you've got a few worrying spots. I think some of them we've touched on here that might drag that average down. So yeah. Even though we might talk about 54 countries in averages, I think the extremes in terms of the good and the bad is actually quite wide. This is why we're always advising clients to say, look, averages are good as a starting point, but you have to dig into the dynamics of each and every single country. But look, I mean, we're an African investment bank, so we're naturally bullish on the continent simply because we're here to stay, right?
Okay, cool. Thank you so much. That was us with Neville, just giving us a roundup of what's going on in and around Africa, just highlighting the fact that, South Africa is a bit touch and go for some business people, for the business community, and they're looking to Africa, and it's actually providing quite a few growth opportunities. He highlights countries like Senegal and Cote d'Ivoire as, maybe not so popular as yet, but definitely countries that have good policy regimes that are being implemented right now. And he's saying that one of the things to consider is, currencies, just keep an eye on what's going on in the currencies if you are a corporate or a business that's looking to expand into the rest of Africa, particularly because the volatility that we see in the rand is not what you're going to see in the rest of those other African currencies, particularly because they are not as liquid. And he's saying that is a big one because some businesses that have ventured into countries like Nigeria have failed purely because of things like that. So it's definitely something to think about. So thank you so much, Neville. How can people follow you or engage with you?
Look, I think the easiest way to reach us is research@rmb.co.za, and we'll be able to address any of your concerns from that mailing address.
This is Mudiwa's Take.
Quite an interesting conversation with Neville from RMB. I think they are very, topical discussions to be had. Because when you're looking at the economy, specifically the South African economy, I think we're always complaining about what's going on in South Africa, not realizing that within the context of the continent, at least, there are a lot of countries, destinations, etc., that actually offer perhaps higher returns, but might not have the skills base or the industrial base that South Africa provides. So it's always good to contextualize things like that. But more than anything else, what I appreciated especially about the discussion is, as South Africa, people need to have, you know, greater discussions, because when you're looking at the United States economy, for example, the United States is literally a collection of about 50 or so countries, in the same way that the European Union is a collection of European countries. And most of the time you look at them as a group and not necessarily as specific countries, units, blocks or states. And I think that approach really needs to be taken a bit more seriously when it comes to the African continent and how we invest money and how investment decisions are made. Why is it so hard to be doing business on the African continent if you're from one African country, yet you have a lot of foreign players coming in and doing so? So I think more needs to be done. And I think we also need to just be paying attention, especially small businesses, for example, because our discussion focused a lot around what corporates are doing in terms of making their decisions for Africa expansions, etc. But I think for a lot of smaller businesses, there's a lot of opportunities for some of the skills, some of the services that are being provided in South Africa, and actually paying attention to what's going on out there. You know, you might see or find, you know, a place, a country, another market that is either similar to South Africa or lacks what South Africa has to such an extent that you can take advantage of what lacks and actually provide your service in that economy. Bearing in mind, of course, like what Neville said, that there's no, you know, one size fits all approach. Just because you are doing something in South Africa does not necessarily mean it will translate to the rest of the African continent. So that's me. Also quite nice just having that discussion around Zimbabwe. You know, I'm from Zimbabwe personally, so it's good to get a sense of what's going on there. And also, it's an important economy because there's so many South African companies that are invested there, and for a lot of them, they have no choice but to be invested there, and they're seeing something. So it's definitely a good one. The Nigeria story is one that we're definitely gonna have to do, you know, talk a little bit more about, because it's an interesting story, particularly around commodity prices and how, you know, governance has actually taken a bit of a turn over the last decade, and how that's impacting the rest of that region and investment flows for Africa, and how that as a hotbed, and now you have Ethiopia coming up. So it will be interesting over years just to see how those different economic hubs develop over time. So that's been us. Thank you so much, our guest. That's Neville Mandimika, who is an economist and fixed income strategist at Rand Merchant Bank. And that's been it for this episode of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcast on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab. On Twitter, we're BD Spotlight. And then remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. Thank you to our amazing team. Our producer is Paige Muller. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail, and this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. Remember that we are a multimedia live production. So for myself and the rest of the team, it is good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.